I'll be standing right there, very close to you, using the same bait, casting into what I think is approximately the same spot, and having no luck whatsoever while you pull in fish after fish. Why is that?
Well, because I spit on the hooks.
My dad loves the outdoors, especially hunting and fishing. He's 84 years old now, which means he's got a lifetime of great stories to tell. So that's what this show is. I'm Eldon Nelson, and this is Hunting and Fishing Stories with My Dad Gene.
Certain spit pheromone, huh?
Well, I think a little experience helps. You get the lay of the land out, what the water's doing and where the fish are lying and feeding, and they're not equally dispersed everywhere. And so I just have a feel for, maybe over the years of experience, and knowing the best place to cast and what to put on and what not to put on and the time of day, and that seems to work.
Who taught you to fish?
Well, I think early days I went with my dad. My dad really liked, Eldon Nelson, really liked to fish. And I remember the first time that we went out on a good fishing trip was we hiked to a lake up in the High Uintas in the wilderness area in the fall of the year. And it was beautiful weather, and fall was moving on, and fished in this lake where they were mostly brook trout. And he showed me about how to cast the line and how to set the hook and what lure or fly to use. Mm-hmm. And so I got a real interest at that point. And so a lot of what I know now is just what I picked up along the years about different people might have given me an idea. And I watched some people catch fish and others not, and saw what they were doing. And like I was, always remember a certain circumstance up on the North Platte up in southern Wyoming. And there were three or four fishermen who were fishing in a hole that I really wanted to fish in. It's where I used to fish. But they were spread out across there. So I went above them just a little ways. And it was just maybe my lucky day. But pretty soon, I was just catching one after another, and I noticed they were watching me. And before long, they were up on the bank right above me watching and wondering what it was I was using that was different. And they wanted to see the fly that I was using. And because they had been so ornery to begin with, I had decided, I'm not going to show them what I'm using. So I kept the fly in my hand, and when they came up and talked to me, I explained to them what fly I was using. And I know they thought, why doesn't he just open his hand and show me? And so I don't know how that relates to the question, but
that's okay. We don't have to stay on any track. we're hoping to just go wherever the conversation takes us. Now, one thing that, I mean, when you talk about different flies, different bait, I remember as a kid that we needed to be careful of what blender we used when making food, because there was at least a likelihood, a possibility, that you'd been using the blender for making your own special bait.
Well, we're not supposed to make this public.
It's too late. I've been telling this story for years.
Well, what the blender was used, that we knew that there were certain times of the year when fish really feed on eggs that are spawning, that the females are releasing eggs, and different species might spawn in the fall and one might spawn in the spring. Anyway, I would keep the eggs. And then I didn't want to just freeze the eggs, so I just put the whole egg sack after some of the cleaning the fish in the blender. Mm-hmm. And the blender would just liquefy everything. And it looked almost good enough, like a chocolate or like a strawberry shake, and just use that to put on the nymph or some sponge to make it look like an artificial egg. And that enhanced the use of it. So,
I might be mixing things up, but I think there were other techniques you used as well. I mean, I remember there was pantyhose involved at some point.
No, I didn't understand the question.
Other things that you've used when making bait. There was a little sack made of pantyhose. Was that part of it? Am I remembering something else?
No, that's part of it. I learned that in Michigan fishing for steelhead. Mm-hmm. You'd use some gauze or some pantyhose, just any
cheesecloth, sure.
Any material like that where you could put the eggs in there and tie it up and then put that on the hook. And so those steelhead and different fish who were running up the river would feed on those. So when I moved back out west, I tried that a few times in a few places, and it worked really well. But you had to have the eggs, and you had to be able to tie those up using both hands and your teeth. So
I remember that. And you were able to tie, a fishing line knot faster and better than anyone else I've ever seen. I knew the right knots, you know, having watched you, and you, of course, you taught me. But it would take me minutes, whereas it would take you seconds. Is how I remembered it. So, what is the knot you use when tying a hook to a line?
Well, it's called a double cinch knot. Mm-hmm. It used to be just a single one where you'd put the line through the eye, wrap it around the line itself, and then put it through the loop that's showing and cinch it up. And I found that with some lines, some monofilament, some fly lines, that would just the nature of the monofilament, it might slip. And so rather than just putting it through one loop, you put it through the one loop and then pass it back through another loop. And that one makes it so it doesn't slip at all and takes a little bit more. But with my vision changing, it's a good thing I had all that practice because I can still see well enough to tie the line on the same way.
So you can do it almost by feel. Your fingers just know what they're doing, kind of like when ties a shoe.
Yeah, that's part of it. So that was a good knot, just a double cinch knot. And there's when you're tying two lines together, two monofilaments, there's a knot they call a nail knot. Mm-hmm. Nail knot, and I guess it came into being by someone wrapping both lines around a nail and putting the loose end under the loops. And but there's a little device you can buy that ties that nail knot a whole lot easier for you. So
I'll just have to trust you on that. So one other, and tell me if I'm divulging too many secrets here, but cheese, that we would put cheese on the hooks when fishing in the Green River. And I kind of remember that as being Velveeta.
Well, that was a time when the Flaming Gorge Dam was first built.
Right.
And the water below there was ideal trout water. Before the dam was built, it was just muddy and slow and trash fish in there. Mm-hmm. But with the building of the Flaming Gorge Dam, that water comes off the bottom, and I think the water's about 400 feet deep right there at the dam, so it comes off clear and cold. And they stocked it with rainbows to begin with,
right?
And they really grew well. But during those days, and probably even these days, my main goal in going fishing is to feel one on the end of my line. And a lot of times I don't really care how it got there, whether it's a fly, a nymph, or a spinner, or bait.
Yeah.
And so one of the favorite baits there you could take was Velveeta cheese.
I remember cutting little cubes, little like half-inch cubes, and you could shape them into a little teardrop shape very easily.
And you could put that on and float it down, and the cold water would solidify it a little bit. And so, but then in recent years, that whole length of that river's been declared a gold medal river, and any form of bait is not allowed.
No, can't use the cheese there anymore. No, so it's okay for us to talk about because it's not allowed to, you can't use it there anymore.
Yeah, it's flies and lures only now. And that's true not only from the upper stretch down to Little Hole, they call it, but also from Little Hole down to Browns Park. So that whole stretch of that river is flies and lures only. So, but in the early days, cheese seemed to be a keepable kind of a bait that you could take with you and keep in the refrigerator, and it was easy to put on and effective to use.
And I'm glad we got a chance to do it then. So this would have been, I'm thinking now, it's like I was a kid, so that would have been 40 years ago. So
yeah
I guess things have changed a little bit since then.
And so you've gained 40 years and I've gained 40 years. That makes you still young and me getting old.
Let's talk a little bit about fishing in the ocean. That was always my grandpa's kind of his favorite thing. But I remember you did pretty well there too. And I remember in particular, maybe just because of the picture I have of me holding its mouth open afterward, but there was what seemed at the time to be a pretty big shark you caught.
Well, yeah, Granddad Smith loved to fish in the ocean. And so we'd take his boat out and he would steer it and drive it and go where we wanted to. And my only job was just to put the lines out and pull the fish in. But one day we were out at a place called the inlet where the sound entered the open ocean.
Right.
And the tide would come in and tide would go out. And so I made it a little bit like a river. But we were out there fishing for flounder. I kept getting bites, but it weren't flounder, and they were sharks. The rod that we had and the hooks we had and the line we had couldn't hold the sharks. So we went back to the cottage there where we were staying and got a heavier rod with a steel leader on it and went back out. And sure enough, in the same place, the sharks were there. And I caught that one, and that's the one you got the picture of. But
and what kind of a shark was it?
I think it was called a sand shark.
Okay.
They weren't the huge sharks that you see out in the open ocean, but they still get 4 or 5 feet long,
right?
As I remember. And they looked like sharks, and they fought like sharks. And sharks don't have ribs. They just got a central notochord. And so we'd been told that shark meat is really pretty good eating. So that's the one we tried to skin it, but the shark's skin was just like sandpaper. And trying to skin that one, finally did, then we just cut it up in pieces and your grandma cooked it, and it was really pretty good eating. So
I mostly don't remember how a given fish tastes, but I do remember that one, that they looked a lot like white steaks.
Yeah. They were really white, and I was surprised about how good they was to eat.
Yeah.
But I think part of it was just because it was fresh, and we took good care of it and got it skinned and got it cut up. And Grandma was a really good cook at fish, so that was the experience of my shark fishing.
Much more recently, you and Janelle went to Alaska, and I just saw some very nice pictures of some very big salmon. So tell me what it's like to fish for salmon.
Well, we flew into Anchorage and then caught a smaller plane that flew down to a place, little town called Cordova. And that's where Eyak Lake was that flowed into the Eyak River. And the river flows down about 6 or 7 miles at the most into the ocean. And so the silver salmon We were up there in September. A little bit rainy, a little bit cool, but it wasn't Alaska cold yet. But the salmon were, silver salmon were running up that river. So we fish with lures, and we just float down the river in a boat, an aluminum boat, an outboard motor, four of us, and cast the lures with a rod that I bought a heavier line for, so I knew we were going after the silver salmon.
Mm-hmm.
And just cast these lures. And up there, if you bought them, they were about $5 a piece, but at Cabela's here in Grand Junction are about two. So I took up a bunch of different colors, and that seemed to be pretty effective, and would hook them and fight them out and take care of them, clean them, freeze them, and bring salmon home and have fish tacos the rest of the year.
Hard to beat a fish taco. So as someone who is, I think most of your favorite fishing has been for trout over the years. What's the difference between fishing for trout and fishing for salmon, just in the difficulty, enjoyment of catching and bringing them in?
Well, probably one of the biggest is availability.
Uh-huh.
There's a lot of good trout fishing streams around here in Grand Junction. But as far as just the pleasure of going out, I have to rank floating down that river and casting for the salmon, because when you hooked one, they were always pretty good size.
Right.
They were, 10 to 15, 16 pounds a piece, and always gave you a good fight. And so that was really enjoyable. You just knew that you were going to get a good fish. You're where the big fish were. Around here, you get plenty of action, but sometimes there are little rainbows that might be a foot long, and or there might be a big German brown that might be 4 or 5 pounds. So I enjoyed the outing and the outdoors without any other reason for going.
That's it for this episode. If you have a question for my dad, you can email me at eldennelson@gmail.com. That's eldennelson@gmail.com. I'll have more stories soon. Thanks for listening to Hunting and Fishing Stories with My Dad, Gene.